The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. It's your turn. It's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study. Our phones are open at 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. And our guest today is Pastor Kevin Parviz from Chi V Shalom. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good, good on this nice summer day.
It is a beautiful day, isn't
it? Our phones are open, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A little background about Pastor Kevin Parviz, if you're just tuning in or don't realize. You grew up in Denver.
Yes.
And in a Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
And you were pretty agnostic as a young man.
Well, yeah. By the time I got to college, I was fairly religious growing up. But
uh-huh.
By the time I got to college, I had become a little disenfranchised.
You did the bar mitzvah and the whole thing.
Oh, sure.
Did
sure,
you really?
You bet.
And now you're a Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod pastor. Christianity through marriage evangelism.
Not the best way, but it certainly worked with me. I don't encourage missionary dating. But
And your daughter had something to do with that,
oh,
too.
She certainly did, yeah. In fact, all my kids really.
Anyway, you've got a global perspective, and you can tell us about some of the traditions of the Jewish faith along the way. And I ran across a story the other day on the AP Wire about rabbis in Israel. And apparently they shun technology, and I thought I was reading about Amish people or something. But are there some laws that say you're not supposed to use, watch television and use the internet and all that kind of stuff?
Only on the Sabbath, but I can see an ultra-Orthodox fringe sect becoming sort of Luddite in the fear of technology. Because, you know, technology is very enticing, and it can become a god as much as any other mm-hmm. god, and I think that might be part of the issue. I think that you mentioned the Amish, that's kind of the part of the issue there as well.
Mm-hmm. However, the point of the story was that Jews in Israel are not paying attention to what the head rabbis are telling them, and they're using the internet and using all this technology anyway.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be a very overwhelming Jewish majority opinion, if you will, that technology is evil and you shouldn't use it. But I do recognize the growing trend in especially in an ultra-Orthodox rabbi who's saying essentially that we've allowed the tech, because to be perfectly honest with you, technology does give us opportunity for corruption. I mean, we are exposed to so much on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and you have this explosion of pornography because of internet pornography that's just on everybody's desktop if they want it. I mean, it's just a shame. And I think we should probably be a little more concerned about the use of technology, at least not in so much in banning it, but at least in teaching responsible use of it.
Mm-hmm. And it does have its limits.
Certainly. And I think, I have this saying at home, there's never a question now that needs to go unanswered, because we all, everybody in my house has, an iPhone and a computer, and there's Wikipedia. Of course, you can't really trust Wikipedia for everything, but anytime you say, I'll have to look at, you don't have to say that anymore. You can just look it up and have an answer right there and then. And
it's quite a tool for me here when I'm on the air.
Well, sure, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, the shuttle Atlantis has rocketed into orbit. I listened to the launch on NPR.
That's pretty cool.
I was out picking up some glasses, and I actually got a little glassy-eyed. Because this is the final flight, and I keep hearing the commentators repeating that, where do we go from here? And we just said technology has its limits. I got to thinking about the Tower of Babel, and it's almost like this whole program, we built this tower, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
We're still on this planet.
I mean, there's an interesting movie coming out called Apollo 18 that says why we never went back. It's some kind of horror film of what really happened on the moon and why we've never went back. I just don't think it's cost effective at this point, probably, because I'm sure we have the technology. Certainly growing up, I thought, sure. I grew up watching 2001 A Space Odyssey in 1968. I thought sure by 2001 we'd be in space.
Something grander than where we are now, which is like nowhere.
Yeah, nothing.
And it's like, what is the point?
And I'm amazed that all the money that has gone into the shuttle program as it's coming to an end, and what was truly achieved. I'm sure we have the Hubble telescope.
We've got
the International
Tang.
Space Station. We got Tang. Although I think Tang was before the shuttles.
We have Corningware.
Yeah.
No, there are some benefits, and certainly money spent on a project like that is preferable to money spent in a war somewhere.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. But still, when all is said and done, we've got some beautiful pictures from the Hubble telescope, and I think they're putting up a new telescope now that's going to be able to fly in a jet that will be in the upper atmosphere, lower stratosphere, I think.
I guess my takeaway from listening to the launch today and realizing all of this was that we are humbled by the immenseness of God's universe.
I wish that was the answer for everybody. I mean, unfortunately, most of the technology spent on the space race has just showed us that we are just little fly specks that have come along through evolution and, I am humbled. There's no question. You can't look at some of those photographs that the Hubble took and just be amazed at God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
But to come away with that thinking that that we're all just an accident of evolution is just a sad statement that seems to be building toward.
Yeah, and it's almost like God allowed us to have a little glimpse into His world.
Yeah, and the scriptures say all of those things were given to us for our enjoyment, for our pleasure to see the stars and to see the grandeur of the universe. I mean, it's amazing that we're so willing to believe we're an accident of evolution rather than the crown of creation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then the crown of creation comes with more responsibility than being an accident of evolution.
So. Yes, and then you're accountable.
Yeah, exactly.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's a story that maybe you'd like to tackle. The Israeli military is mustering battlefield rabbis in what it calls a campaign to promote religious values in its frontline ranks. The move, announced in the latest issue of the military's official weekly magazine, drew fire on Monday from one of Israel's most popular newspaper columnists, who cautioned against creating a, quote, God's army. Under the plan, a reserve army rabbi will be assigned to every battalion in the military's northern command, whose areas of responsibility include the Lebanese and Syrian borders. The assimilation of religion into combat battalions is increasing, said an article, which gave details of the program being implemented after a year-long pilot project. While rabbis have long served in Israel's military, their roles traditionally have focused on overseeing adherence to Jewish dietary laws in its kitchens, Sabbath observance, and religious ceremonies. Now, the commander of the infantry brigade's Battalion 51 does not move a meter without his rabbi.
You know, it's interesting.
It's like having chaplains, I guess.
It's just chaplaincy. I think maybe finally rabbis are getting into spiritual care. I mean, that has normally not been the rabbi's job in the synagogue. The job of spiritual care is usually the synagogue's president. But an interesting sidebar to this, I was reading in the Jewish Light this week that there is a concern that there's a huge number of Orthodox people who are joining the IDF. Of course, everybody has to be in the Israeli Defense Force at some point or another anyway in their life. But there's this huge influx of Orthodoxy in the IDF that is going to, should President Obama's dream come to pass, in which Israel would withdraw from the West Bank, the speculation is that a religious military will not support a withdrawal from the West Bank, and so the government would have a real hard time on their hands doing that. So it's almost as if it's in preparation for
a method to the madness.
The world's pressure against Israel, yeah.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Marsha has a question for Pastor Kevin Parviz about Jewish tradition. Marsha, welcome.
Hi. I find it's easier to read the Bible when I understand what the Jewish people were going through and what their traditions were. And I was wondering if you have suggestions for references for finding information like that.
Sure, Marcia. Thanks. I think you're absolutely right. I was just talking with a pastor in Michigan this morning about how it seems like our understanding of the scriptures becomes enriched when we understand the context from whom it comes. And certainly if we want to walk in the footsteps of Jesus, we want to understand the cradle in which he was born, which is our Jewish roots. And if you want to go to our website, www.lije.org, on the resource section, there's a number of resources, one of which I wrote through Concordia Publishing House called The Bible Feasts. That's a beginner. That's a very short Bible study, but it's a beginner that you can look at. And there's more resources like that on that website and coming. So that would be a good place to start. Otherwise, I'd love to talk to you privately and walk you through some of that stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet. Blessings, Marshall.
All right. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Have you been to Israel?
Sure.
How many times?
A couple. When I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, they were looking for us to volunteer to go to Israel during times of war to keep the economy going. And I volunteered twice, but Israel's wars tend to end pretty quickly. So I never made it over there then. But, in fact, we're going to Israel again in February of next year. I'm leading a tour there to do the footsteps of Peter, the northern areas, and, of course, Jerusalem. And we're probably going to be volunteering to help a kibbutz there.
And does that put the Bible in 3D for someone?
It's an amazing place. I mean, number one, you get to realize just exactly how small the distances are. I mean, you can sit on the Mount of Olives and hit the wall with a rock. So, the distances become realistic. And also, if you understand Israel's history, you understand by going how dangerous it would be to give up some of the very secure areas now. Because the land, at one point in Israel before 1967, was only 7 miles wide. Picture of what exactly is going on in history today, and also it enlivens your study of the Bible. We did I flew into Tel Aviv with my family, and our flight to Eilat was canceled or something was wrong, and we ended up renting a thrifty minivan because I have four kids and they don't have cars big enough for six people. And we drove through the wilderness of Zin to get down to Eilat. And it's to think that's the wilderness that Jesus walked in for 40 days. And it's just an amazing trip, and I think everyone should make it. Even with regard to the tensions over there, it's still an amazing trip.
Do they deal with the same cultural issues that we deal with here in Israel? Abortion, homosexuality?
Probably not. Generally speaking, those are not really issues for Jewish people. Abortion is not a real issue for Jewish people.
Is it legal in Israel?
I don't know that for sure, but I know that typically Jewish rabbis and Jewish people are typically pro-choice because rabbis define life as when the head crowns and not before. And so
is that biblical? Is there
no,
something
it's
in
not
the Old
biblical.
Testament?
It's just
something they...
It's purely rationalism. When we can see the baby, it's a baby. But clearly the scriptures indicate that we are life in the womb, and there's Jeremiah, there's Psalm 51, there's all kinds of texts like that. But, they're not a particularly biblical people. They are... Jewish people tend to interpret the scriptures through Talmud and through rabbinic interpretation more than a more direct interpretation of the scriptures. And so abortion's not an issue. Homosexuality seems to be not an issue within the Jewish community, which is unfortunate. But they don't really wrestle with those social issues. I was blessed. We have a member of our ministry who represented us at the last Walk for Life in Washington, D.C., and there was a rabbi there, a pro-life rabbi who had a booth, and she got to talk to him, and it's a small but perhaps growing understanding of those kinds of realities amongst the Jewish people. Of course, we need the Holy Spirit to be enlightened to these issues.
Are there female rabbis?
Oh, sure. There's lots of female rabbis. The Reform movement is huge, which, of course, pretty much encompasses about 70% of Jews, either who have a...
Is that a break with tradition?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because the Reform movement goes back into the 40s, so that's quite a long time. And who's to say how long tradition is? It certainly is a break with, ancient Jewish tradition, but... it's a growing movement, and feminism is a strong movement within the Jewish people. And so
you could have a homosexual female rabbi who is pro-choice.
No, absolutely. In fact, I would be surprised if there aren't one. And we have a prominent synagogue here in St. Louis that has a woman rabbi who is, I don't know about her stand on abortion, but I know that she performed a marriage for, quote-unquote marriage, for two lesbian women. So, you know, it's just not an issue, those kinds of cultural. And truly, I think spiritual, scriptural issues are not the dilemmas that Jews wrestle with.
So we would view that as being very liberal, but yet rabbis are conservative
To be honest with you, rabbis, Jews, they're all very liberal.
Yeah.
They tend to... I was disappointed. I read a thing in the Jewish Light recently where even in light of President Obama's statements about Israel, 62% of all Jews still approve of his presidency. I'm surprised that they're not at all questioning his, because he has absolutely shown no real support for the state of Israel. But the state of Israel is one of those concepts that American Jews haven't really, I think in this generation, they've moved further away from their support of Israel and Israel. They've become very comfortable in this country and have no need for the state of Israel.
It's just a problem over there.
Yeah, exactly. Although they still send the youth groups over there and all of that for their trips, but the state of Israel has become less and less of an important thing to Jewish people in America. Mm.
Is there more employment for young people in Israel than in other parts of the Middle East?
Well, certainly than other parts of the Middle East. I mean, the Middle East is predominantly chaos in which Israel sits as the only island of you know, real advancement there. So there's certainly more opportunities there for young people. I think, you know, it's amazing to me because a majority of the Arabic population of Israel doesn't want Israel to give up portions of Israel. They are prosperous. They work. They're safe. They have all, you know, it's just that there is this very vocal minority that become rabid, if you will, and have this. It seems to me that, of course, the world doesn't really want to hear that.
Well, it appears to me that the Arabic countries over there don't have enough for their youth to do.
No, clearly.
And that's what causes a lot of the problems.
Clearly, I think that unrest in those countries is warranted to some extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. But clearly, they don't keep busy enough. That's true.
Yeah. And Israel functions. It has an economy that works and apparently a system that works.
Certainly. I mean, more Nobel Prize winners, more... You find more coming out of Israel than really any other single nation over there.
But I'm fascinated by this groupthink of people who are rabbis and Jews and perhaps even Orthodox Jews who tend to lean liberal in their thinking.
Well, I also understand that the old maxim is true. Wherever you have two Jews together, you have three opinions. You know, in many sense, we'll take any side of an issue just to have a good argument. So that hardly is... something of bellwether, if you will. But typically speaking, I think Jewish people tend to see themselves more in commiseration with minority issues. And even though, while they are a minority, they certainly don't have the same problems or the same benefits as a minority might. But and there is the social consciousness that, you know, I've often said that if we had compassionate conservatives, it would be so much better. Because we have to have conservatives with a social conscience, and they see conservatism as having no social conscience, and Jews have a very strong social conscience. So they're walking that tightrope and that fence, and they tend to fall off onto the liberal side when they do that.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a successful summer when it comes to your evangelism attempts with Kyvie Shalom?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you measure success. I measure success by the church being active, and if that's the case, then yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, people, our congregation has got, we're having a new member class now. We've got two or three new members coming in the fall. That's nice. It's still a challenge. And of course, this summer has been, you know, intermittently wet and unbearably hot. So it's kind of hard to get out on the streets. Mm-hmm. But we're doing a lot in our community, in our neighborhood, yeah.
How you doing with your family?
The family's good.
I'm talking about the relatives in Colorado and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I have no family left in Colorado. Oh. They all moved to Ohio when I moved to Ohio, and it seems like they follow me wherever I go. But they haven't come to Missouri. But
have they come around to Christianity?
My brother passed away a few years ago. He was not a believer, and in fact, mm-hmm. he and I were estranged for lots of reasons, one of which was my faith. I have a sister who is kind of not a believer, but sort of in a... I'm not sure what she's involved in. And then I have a sister and my mother who have come to faith. So, yeah, it's been...
The people in our own backyard are the hardest to
get
through.
Well, you know, the thing is, they don't, you know, they don't see... I don't think my mother...
Jesus went through the same thing.
Yeah, my mother and my sister, I'm sure their faith had nothing to do with me. It's just that others in the church, you know, that's the wonderful thing about the church. There's other people. It's not all on you. And mm-hmm. so all you can do is pray and witness and do the best you can and keep communication lines open. It, you know, it doesn't do anybody any good to disown people. Jews, you know, I tend to disown when someone comes to faith in Jesus. But if you really work at keeping those lines of communications open, they eventually do. We're still family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I have family members who have sort of developed their own belief system.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a lot of that going on sure. out there. That's not unusual, is it?
We like to recreate God into our image.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. An organization that placed a billboard in Ohio supporting atheism says it has been taken down for the second time after eliciting a complaint. The ad in Columbus from the Freedom From Religion Foundation featured the smiling face of a local nonbeliever and the man's message, "I can be good without God." The foundation says the billboard was removed Tuesday by the outdoor advertising company that erected it after a complaint from a business owner the group did not name. The ad had first been moved after it was taken down in June from property owned by a church when the pastor objected. The foundation says it has been assured that the billboard will again be relocated. The ad is one of seven the group is sponsoring in Columbus for a month. Why do we have this going on today?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. That particular message is something that we in the church should learn from. Hmm. Because, you know, we tend to think that if we just act like Christians and be good people, people will come to faith because of who we are. And there are lots of good, quote, good people out there. You can be good without God. And it isn't enough to be good. We have to be intentional about sharing our faith. And so clearly the atheists are being intentional about sharing their non-faith. And I think, you know, and frankly, I think it's as appropriate for them to have a billboard as it is for any church to erect, you know, all those God billboards that were on the highways all mm-hmm. over the place for a while there. You know, it's just as appropriate for them to be able to pay their money and have their message spread as well in this country. And I think we as the church, rather than objecting to it, need to use it as a teaching point and say, you know, that's right. There are lots of good people who don't believe in God. So it isn't enough to be good. What is it enough to be? It's enough to be forgiven, and it's enough to be intentional about our faith and not just, you know, show people how good we are so that they might come to faith, because that doesn't really get anywhere.
Not with God, because he doesn't recognize that good.
That's exactly right.
As good.
And with anybody else, really.
Mm. Yeah. Pastor Kevin Parvee is our guest. It's time for a timeout. Can you believe that?
It goes fast.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be back with more Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
I've heard business people complain that nonprofits don't respond in timely ways to needs and opportunities. I believe that's true. Concordia Seminary strives to instill responsiveness in our graduates. Responsiveness to the needs of congregations and responsiveness to the needs of our communities and world. Responsiveness is a seminary core value, and it's a great commission value.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Jeske from Time of Grace. Did you know that in addition to hearing Time of Grace every Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on KFUO, you can also see Time of Grace every Sunday morning? Watch us on ABC 30 every Sunday morning at 6:30 for some straight talk and real hope.
Saturday mornings at 11:30 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Eye-catching new billboards are popping up around Ireland. They're sponsored by a pro-life group called Women Hurt. The billboards picture women who've had abortions. Part of their testimonies is shared. One reads, "On the anniversary of my abortion, I used to cry myself to sleep." Women Hurt has no political agenda, but only wants to share their stories of hope and healing with other women. They want to break the silence surrounding the psychological trauma abortion often causes. Part of their message is to instill hope for women. There can be light at the end of the long, dark tunnel. When both women and men who've lost a child to abortion see them, they'll know they aren't alone in their grief. I pray the message of Women Hurt is heard and positively received.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Another Independence Day. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The Reverend Franklin Graham arrives in South Sudan today, where he'll help celebrate Saturday's official birth of the world's newest nation. Ken Isaacs, Vice President of Graham Samaritan's Purse Ministry, says the atmosphere is already euphoric in the Nile River city of Juba, which will be the capital of the new East African nation. Decades of civil war between Sudan's mostly Arab north and the Christian and animist south left more than 2 million people dead, and the fighting continues in some disputed border areas. Isaac says Graham already knows Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and the incoming president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, and plans to meet with both of them again this weekend.
I think that he would like to have prayer, that he would have just the right words to share with the heads of state of both countries.
Samaritan's Purse has been working in southern Sudan since 1993. I'm Steve Coleman.
The next broadcast is an Open Mic Friday, during which you can call me, Tom Baker, by dialing 1-800-730-2727 to ask any question of a theological nature. You may wonder whether events in the world deserve a theological discussion also, such as the Casey Anthony trial, the debt ceiling, the Joplin tornadoes, and so forth.
Weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
Henry Shaw, founder of Missouri Botanical Garden, did not know his 211th birthday would be marked by thousands of people in 2011. However, you can come celebrate with free admission to all visitors from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, July 24th at 4344 Shaw Boulevard. View the many horticultural displays and historic buildings, along with special entertainment, games, music, and a Tower Grove House tour. Call Missouri Botanical Garden for a preview or find information at mobot.org.
It's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Kevin Parviz is our guest here today on KFUO Radio. Well, the gay issue, and I hesitate using that word anymore because our guest pastor yesterday said that's a euphemism for homosexual. When that appears in the news, that's just continues the mainstreaming of this alternate lifestyle by using the word gay. So I've got two headlines on the ChristianPost.com website. Every day there's something about this issue in the news. And there's two stories today, and I'll read them verbatim, but just insert the word homosexual when you hear the word gay, okay? Cisco vendor fired for writing book against gay marriage. And the news story that just popped up, New York clerk may be forced to sign gay marriage licenses. And then there's another story. They've got a series that started, The Bible and the Gay Marriage Question, Part 1. This stuff just won't go away. It just keeps rolling.
Well, and I'm often wonder why we in the church demonize the homosexuals any more than any other sin that's out there. I mean, I think for whatever reason, the church feels threatened by the homosexual revolution, if you will. And there clearly is one. I mean, while statistically, most non-gay generated statistics, if you will. They say that only 1.5% of our entire population is homosexual.
Yes.
We still have a huge lobby, and they want to get into the news. And for whatever reason, we as a church are frightened of that, and you know, think that somehow it must hurt our message, but I think it just gives us more opportunity to proclaim the gospel and the law, and not be so frightened about it. I've often wondered if it wouldn't be. I mean, it seems to me that the homosexual agenda for gay marriage, at least, is cornerstoned on the fact that they want the same tax rights or tax deductions, if you will, that any other married couple might have. And I can't imagine why the church, frankly, in that particular area would object to the government just saying you can have the same tax rights as in a homosexual whatever. I wouldn't call it a marriage, because I do think the word marriage is still and that's part of what frightens the church. The word marriage is still something that is sanctified by God and is performed by the church. Civil unions, I suppose we should say. They probably should have those tax benefits that a married couple would have. And maybe that would take out much of the stupid, you know, the public outrage and the public cry over. Although I was fascinated by how many, you know, certainly there was a large Jewish presence at the Gay Pride Parade. Almost every synagogue had a representative there. And, you know, it's this whole business of, you know, we need to be inclusive of everybody. And, you know, in some sense, you know, we still have to call sin sin, but I don't think we need to call homosexuality any greater sin than anything else, except that they put it in the news and in our face, and so we demonize
it. Well, don't you think that the church is trying to protect the culture, the greater culture? I mean,
of course.
We had a story earlier this week about gay history being presented in California schools.
Well, I think that you're going to end up with a Gay History Month, just like we have a Black History Month. Mm. You know, I think that's the way the culture is going in this country. And certainly we as a church have a responsibility, I suppose, to, quote, protect the culture. But the reality is the church has always been countercultural. And we, in a sense, have to be countercultural. Our message is a foolishness to Gentiles. And so we have to keep, you know, I don't think we have to be threatened by the culture going in any direction, because we always have the same universal message from time immemorial, and that's the message that we have to proclaim, regardless of the culture we're in. We need to recognize that we're countercultural and we're not part of this culture.
Most of our listeners are Christian, and I don't have any hard data, but my gut tells me that most of them are tired of hearing about this gay stuff.
Well, you know, like I said, I think
they're getting worn down.
It's a lot, and that is the methodology here as well. I mean, there is a strong lobby and a strong news, and the news, of course, leans liberal, and so they're going to put as much of this as they can in the news, and eventually we'll get tired and just go away. That can't happen. But I dare not think that we should demonize homosexuality any more than adultery or any other kind of, you know, there's sinners coming into every church that are every bit as bad in the eyes of God as any practicing homosexual. And we need to confront all sin in the same way. And I think we get, as a church, you know, we get, I know there's lots of people who are challenged because, you know, we tend to focus on homosexuality. And it's because the homosexual agenda has made themselves a lightning rod by being so vocal
in
and in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go around telling everybody just how heterosexual I am and, and about all my heterosexual exploits. That's nobody's business. Not that I have any. But, you know, that's the
right
point, isn't it? And
uh-huh.
I don't fly a heterosexual flag on my house and... You know, it is amazing how they've made themselves the lightning rod, but that's part of their methodology.
Mm-hmm. No upside-down rainbow in your window.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Meanwhile,
it is amazing, isn't it, though, Paul, how homosexuality, the movement, if you want to call it that, has taken the very imagery of God and made it their own, the rainbow, the color purple, those things, the color of royalty, the color of God's covenant. I mean, they have intentionally taken these godlike images, godly images, and perverted them for their purpose.
Infused it into their movement.
Just to put it in our face, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's no question it is a war, but, you know, I don't see them as our only enemy. I mean, they're not our enemy. You know, sin is still still the enemy. Satan is still the enemy. And we have to have a wider view.
Meanwhile, the clergy are confusing the culture as well. Gay rights advocates in the Presbyterian USA plan to celebrate this Sunday as changes to their church constitution take effect. Gone will be the requirement that clergy live in fidelity within the covenant of marriage between a man and a woman, or chastity and singleness. Elimination of that language clears the way for ordination of clergy in gay and lesbian relationships. The change was endorsed last year by the Presbyterian National Assembly, but required approval by a majority of the denomination's 173 regional presbyteries. That threshold was crossed in May. Each regional body will still decide who it should ordain, and some districts are expected to continue to reject gay and lesbian candidates.
It's interesting. They don't even have to be chaste within a homosexual relationship, according to that article.
Right.
But that's the problem. The churches who view themselves as part of the culture become limp, if you will, because they've lost the power of the Scriptures and the Holy Spirit there. And they quit seeing themselves as countercultural, and they need to adjust and go with the culture. And so you have this movement, not just in the Presbyterian USA, but in the Lutheran Church, in the ELCA, and in a variety of other church bodies. That's just kind of frightening, because that's not the church.
No, and what is there to gain by doing that?
Well, you gain acceptance in the culture. You might gain more people coming. I mean, I see a church. There's a church in our community that is openly a homosexual church, and you know they are.
That's their niche.
That's their niche, and that's how they are making. You know, I hate to quite put it like this because I can't. It's hard to see it as anything more than just pop spirituality, but that's how they're also making their living, and they're not challenging sin for what it is.
Pop spirituality. There's a lot of that today. You see it on television.
No question. We had a movement.
And is that
a few years back? I called it Pop Kabbalah, because you had Madonna and a number of people wearing the little red band on their red string on their wrists and all that. Well, now we're getting Pop Christianity. So
it's like everybody's looking, searching, but they're looking in all the wrong places.
They reject the Orthodox Church. They reject history. They reject tradition. And so when you've rejected all that, the only thing you can do is make your own up.
We had a story the other day. I wish I had it here so I could be more specific, but it's gone away, apparently. Let's talk about something heterosexual. There's a group of women across the United States, and they have a website called gotopless.com. They want to be able to be in the park,
like men.
Men, yeah. And so they're holding events around the country this weekend. And what's inherently wrong with that?
Well, I mean, number one, I mean, just from the church's perspective, the only inherently wrong with that is the fact that men are wired to lust after women.
And we're visually stimulated.
There's just no question. And so, you know, all the adultery that's going to go on in our minds, and those are sins. You know, Jesus is pretty clear about that. So you have that issue going on. But heck, let's face it, the way women dress today anyway, it might as well be topless. So it's a shame what's happening. I don't think, you know, I think women, they walk both sides of the court. I don't want to get too, I'm not misogynistic here, but without understanding how men are visually stimulated, they dress scantily and then yell when a man ogles at them. I just don't get that whole approach to this culture.
Well, apparently there's a disconnect. The fact that they're not visually stimulated by a guy in the park with the shirt off.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. And, you know, maybe a better law would be to make men have to wear shirts. You know, God knows I don't go RR without a shirt, not with this fantastic body. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, that makes sense that that's the next step. It really does.
It's a wacky world, that's
yeah,
for sure.
It really is.
Let's take a look into the future. There's a piece that appears on the ChristianPost.com website. We touched on this lightly the other day. Now, if I could just get this ancient browser to react.
Technology.
Oh, brother. Let me tell you, we're using a version 7. Because we have to.
Version 7
instead of a 9,
yeah.
Because our systems out at headquarters won't recognize the 9. But I need a responsive browser here so we can do a radio show.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious sakes alive. Okay. The America in 2050 will look very different than the America we know today, according to a recent report issued by the U.S. Census Bureau. We'd all like to know what the future holds, and the new report issued by the Census Bureau gives us a glimpse into what our Earth may look like 40 years from now. The report shows a slow immigration and differing birth rates among races in 2050, which means there will be a drastic change in the country's ethnic composition. A profound discovery in the study shows that the non-Hispanic white population will continue to increase, as this population is estimated to live about 10 years longer than expected today. The study revealed that despite the economic woes and forecasted debt crisis, the U.S. is the only country in the top 10 whose superpower ranking is not expected to change in the next 40 years. The census report also highlights dramatic demographic shifts within the country's borders. The landscape of America is also expected to change during the next half century. Suburbs used to be the primary place for Americans to live, but recent housing market issues, high gas prices, and concerns about the economy and environment are changing the entire concept of the suburb. Joel Kotkin, a fellow in urban affairs at Chapman University, says suburbs, as they are, will be a thing of the past and will become more like cities. The suburbs of the future will in many ways be more diverse than the cities, Kotkin said. He said the suburbs of the 50s were predominantly white, but suburbs today have an increasing number of ethnic minorities and recent immigrants. Historically, people living in bedroom communities outside of a city have commuted downtown to work, he said. Suburbs are also becoming more appealing because they are developing their own cultural amenities. Many have rebuilt town centers, stores, libraries, and revived main streets. The luxury city of the future also creates problems for residents' upward mobility, according to the research. Kotkin said the chief concern is that even as more ethnic minorities join the middle class, the ability for people in the middle class to enjoy the same lifestyle as the upper class in their cloistered cities will be limited. He said class, not race, is going to be the great American issue. What kinds of challenges does that pose for the church?
Well, I think that just gives us a rosy future. That means the church is probably going to become more and more comfortable and less effective. I hope not, but that's part of the. I keep praying for the conservative swing back to traditional values. That's bound to happen as we swing so far into non-traditional values. I mean, our country has done that over and over again cyclically in our history. Mm-hmm. He certainly doesn't talk about that at all, but. It is interesting that more and more people are finding the small town mentality to be appealing, and so these suburbs are, there's a Winghaven suburb here in St. Louis that has a small town kind of feel, has a main street, it has mm-hmm. little shops and things like that, and people don't have to go far to do their shopping, they can walk to the store. And I think the churches in those communities are missing the boat if they're not really getting out and talking to those communities, because that's part of the small town ambiance that people are looking for. And so we need, as the church, to get out there and go door to door and talk to the people in our community, let them know that we're here, we're within walking distance, and those kinds of things, and show them not only the glory of God and the gospel of grace, but also the reality that the church is part of what they're missing when they're looking for that kind of small town. When I first moved to Dogtown, I wrote, in fact, in my blog on my website, I talked about how Dogtown was like Mayberry in the city. It was just this little kind of community where we had a grocery store, we had a druggist, we had everybody there. It's kind of changed in the years since I've lived there, but it was so nice to live in this kind of small town environment. Mm-hmm. I think the church is part of that, and I certainly saw that in Dogtown at that time. And I think that we in the church have an opportunity. It's too many people drive past 9 churches to get to the church they're going to. And I think what this is saying is the local walk to church place is going to become the place where people are going to want to go. And we need to recognize that and go and talk to them.
I wonder if the churches of the future will look like churches.
Yeah, unfortunately, the way things are going, if we continue to bow to culture, and it doesn't even look like church anymore now. So, mm-hmm. If we don't get this swing to traditional values that I keep hoping will come.
The architecture certainly changed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It certainly has.
Let's take this call from James. You're on KFUO Radio with Pastor Kevin Parviz.
Hi, Pastor. Yes, when you're talking about the topless people, one of those topless all over with the obesity rates that we have in this country. Men ought to be wearing bras out on the beaches.
It's not a pretty sight, is it?
That's
Jay?
What they showed on their website, yeah. They photoshopped a guy on that beach. Yeah.
They don't need Photoshop to show it.
I'll never forget when we went to Israel with my family, we went to Eilat, and I had no idea that Eilat had nude beaches. And we're out there on the beach, and this like 90-year-old must have looked, I mean, she looked a bit like beef jerky walked by, and my son saw it, and he says, "Mom," and she of course was horrified. But you know, there's the nude beaches are never what you dream of when you're a kid. So, and I think that's probably what this topless movement is going to be like too. Yeah.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Thanks, James.
All right, you have a blessed weekend.
You too. Blessings.
Linda's got a comment for us here. Linda, welcome to KFUO Radio. You're on the air with Pastor Kevin Parviz.
Hi, Brother Polly. Hi,
Good
Pastor.
Morning.
Hi. How are you?
I am fine. Something's been on my heart, though, this morning. Well, from the Bible study, they were talking about the order of the church and our men being, pastors and our deacons. And there's always a ring of apology. You know, they almost apologize that, yes, it's men. But, see, this is the whole problem with the culture, and this is why, you know, the churches are having problems even.
Sure. You know, we've emasculated men in this culture.
This is, and men should not apologize. Do you realize that in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, what it says about our men, that they are made in the image and glory of God? The woman is the glory of the man. Do you realize how beautiful that is when it's being lived out, that the man, he is the head of his home? We've got women running things. We've got women in the court system where they, you know, we don't even think like men. We can look at a doll and make it real. And you know, we don't have the heart to be leaders and to be strong and to be authoritative. And without our men standing up, I say rise up and be the man that God called you to
Amen
be.
Amen to that.
And
Amen.
This country will straighten out. And, you know, our churches, the minute they start ordaining women, that's when things start rolling downhill, too.
I've often said that this homosexual ordination movement is a proximate result of women's ordination.
Pastor Baker always said that.
Yeah,
he said, you watch what happens. It always rolls downhill.
There's no question.
And, you know, it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, it says, I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. And, you know, that is a beautiful arrangement, and nobody loses there.
Yeah,
but everybody loses when it's not in that order.
Exactly. I often Ephesians chapter 5, where it talks about women submit to the man, and women so object to that. And yet it says, men love your wives as Christ loved the church. And when those two things are in harmony, men are sacrificially loving their women, and women are submitting to their husbands. And there's such
beautiful.
A beautiful relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? All this homosexuality would die of neglect if this, right. You know, if our men will rise up.
Amen.
You know, be the man God called you to be. And God bless you all. I love you all.
Thank you.
Brother. Blessings.
And I hope my future son-in-law does not hyphenate his last name. Thank you, Linda. Let's take this call from James. You're on KFUO Radio with Pastor Kevin Parviz.
Yes, Pastor. As a Christian and cultural, are we, as Christians, not to participate in class conflict? Are we not to not distinguish ourselves into upper, middle, or lower class? And the reason why I say that is because of the debt ceiling things that are coming about. What side is the Christian ethic really on? Are we not supposed to be above class conflict and class warfare? Don't we participate in this kind of class conflict if we don't see ourselves as the Christian class instead of upper, middle, or lower class? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I mean, this goes to Luther's distinction of the two kingdoms. I mean, the reality is we as Christians are both citizens of the United States of America and citizens of heaven. And so as citizens of this world, as citizens of the United States, we certainly have an obligation to get involved in the discussion, get involved in the politics, get involved in the things, and to sort of inculcate, if you will, those things with our understanding of how those things should be, and we are informed by the scriptures. Of course, as citizens of heaven, we have a higher calling, and you know, I always say that, you know, I get involved in these kinds of conversations always with the end result to try to share the gospel and to bring about sort of a vacuum of whatever's going on in the other person's mind and heart that the Holy Spirit might fill it. And so we walk that tension, and there is a real tension there, James, that we have to walk and we have to live, but we should always be thinking of the higher things, which is love. And love, we need to. There's no question in much of these class conflicts and racial conflicts, we need to act in love, and that may encourage us to get involved and to do the things that we need to do in order to inculcate those things with the values that we have that are informed by the scriptures.
Pastor Kevin Parviz on Ask the Pastor on the Bible study. Do you have any events planned? Anything surrounding Labor Day this?
We always have a Labor Day outreach and a Labor Day barbecue that we invite a lot of people to, and it's usually really hot, so hopefully it's going to cool off by Labor Day. But yeah, it's a big time for us, that whole weekend of activities and things. And you know, we'll have another outreach in August as well. I think we'll have one left in July as well. So I know we just participated in one. Part of the things that we do too is that we are not bound to just Dogtown or St. Louis. Recently, I helped a group of five churches out in eastern Kansas. They had Symphony on the Prairie, and so we did an outreach out there with them, wrote a gospel tract and things like that. So we're always busy doing things around the country.
I worked the state of Kansas as a salesman once, and I was surprised by how many Jewish people there were.
Yeah, especially on the eastern side, Kansas City side. Yeah, there's lots of Jewish people there, you bet.
And a lot of Mennonites, too, spread throughout
yes,
the state.
Yes, there are, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pastor Kevin Parviz and Kai V. Shalom worships when on weekends?
Sundays at 10 o'clock, Bible studies at 9, and we have Friday night Shabbat activities monthly. So,
and what is that?
That's just a Shabbat gathering with the blessings over Sabbath, and usually a Torah study and a fellowship, things like that.
And when do you plan to go back to Israel?
We're going in February of 2012.
Well, that sounds good. You're going to take a group?
We're hoping to. Yeah, we're doing a small intimate trip, so we're taking 35 to 40. We're doing it on the cheap with the economy the way it is. We don't really want to do first class hotels, and we're going to stay in kibbutz and mishav and
kibbutz.
Yeah, the little places there. So.
All right, Pastor Kevin Parviz, always a pleasure to have you here.
Good
in the
to
studio.
Be here. Thank you very much.
Thank
Blessings.
You. And everybody else, have a good weekend. Thank you for listening to Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study and for participating. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary St. Louis, and KFUO Radio is a listener-supported broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.